Rob Wolf, now we are recording.
Cool. So do you give me an intro or anything, or do I intro us, or what the heck?
I think you should intro us today.
Oh, okay. Hi, folks. This is Rob Wolf, NorCal Strength and Conditioning, CrossFit NorCal, here with the evil genius, Andy Dees. Andy, introduce yourself real quick.
Andy Dees, evil genius. Basically, I've been kicking Rob in the tail for a little bit now to do a podcast. Respond to some emails faster, share some knowledge with the world. So I'm going to give this thing a whirl and kind of see how it goes.
Basically, if my book ever gets written, it's going to be because Andy's like size 14 shoe has been lodged up my ass pretty thoroughly for almost a year now. So thank Andy for that. If this thing doesn't completely suck, then you can thank him for bringing this online. If it blows, then I guess I'll take responsibility for that. But so we're going to... start doing a podcast maybe about once a week, once every 2 weeks, trying to throw a big net over the bulk of the interesting questions that I get via the blog and just my general email. I can talk at about 400 words a minute, and I type at about 14 words a minute and have about a 50% error rate. So hopefully this will speed things up, and then we can archive all this information, kind of mention what each show is about, and then folks can search on that or just download it and listen to it later, and hopefully reach a lot more people and get a lot more information out there. So that's the plan. No goofy intro music, at least as of yet. And I think our tagline is going to be something like pseudoscience since 5 million BC, just to make everybody happy who's listening. So there we go.
Perfect.
So, Andy, are you game for tackling post-workout nutrition on this first one? Seems like a goodie to kick it off with.
Yeah, I think that's a great start. I mean, it's pretty, I think, commonly misunderstood, and there's a lot of questions and discussion about it, so I think that's as good a place as any to sort of start this off.
Cool. So if something pops into your head while I'm jabbering, just like launch in on it. The post-workout deal is super important for everybody, but the problem is that the folks... This is largely kind of in response to folks who end up at the CrossFit Nutrition Certs and then also who migrate to the robwolf.com blog. Folks seem to be looking for some sort of a one-size-fits-all approach to, you know, health, fitness, wellness, the whole thing. And obviously, I pitch kind of a paleo-oriented approach to all this. But then within that, there's just almost infinite nuance to how you tweak and fiddle everything, you know, post-workout nutrition and overall fueling. If you have a skinny 6'3" kid, 165 pounds, who wants to play offensive tackle next year for high school, I hope to God that people understand that his overall nutrition and his post-workout nutrition is going to be significantly different than that a 5'4", 225-pound female who has gone seriously, you know, mother of three kids, seriously overweight, her post-workout nutrition needs are going to be vastly different than what this kid's needs are. And so in a broad term, you know, we could look at things as either being kind of performance-oriented, post-workout recovery, or maybe aesthetics or health-related post-workout recovery. Might be some kind of broad brushes that we could throw within that. If we were to then subcategorize that performance orientation, then we need to look at, is this performance kind of metabolic output oriented, like CrossFit or wrestling or boxing or something like that, or is it purely kind of strength oriented? Because those two scenarios are quite different. If we have somebody who's in a very glycolytically demanding sport, a sport that is hard, high intensity, you know, hitting a ATP, a glycolytic pathway very, very heavily, stuff that has a very intense work output for, you know, under 3 minutes typically, then we're usually needing to fuel with more carbohydrates in the diet. Now, Matt Lalonde did a blog post here about 2 weeks ago in which he showed that you can adapt quite well to a relatively low carbohydrate diet and do great on CrossFit. And that's kind of been my experience, is that the optimum way to run with CrossFit, well, we'll kind of talk about that a little bit. But, you know, in general, if you've got somebody who's an endurance athlete, a CrossFit athlete, something like that, the bulk of their meals I would recommend would be protein plus veggies plus fat. And then for the post-workout meal, it would be protein plus, you know, some sort of a carbohydrate source, like yam, sweet potato would be ideal. Fruit is okay, but for reasons of replenishing liver glycogen preferentially, we kind of minimize fruit for the most part. Fructose tends to preferentially fill liver glycogen, so if we want to maintain our insulin sensitivity overall, which we do as a side thing, we definitely want to maintain that. So that's why I recommend things like squash, yams, sweet potatoes for the bulk of the post-workout carbohydrate. So that would be, you know, the bulk of CrossFitters, the bulk of, you know, jiu-jitsu players, kickboxers, that sort of thing. I think that sort of approach of protein plus carb post-workout, then protein, fat, veggies for the subsequent meals works amazingly well. Matt Lalonde just did a experiment in which he probably is getting about 50, maybe 75 grams of carbs a day, eating a lot of protein, eating a lot of fat, and discovered that that whole process, you know, he shifted out of the large protein carb post-workout meal. And interestingly, when he quit weighing and measuring his food, just generally ate more protein and fat overall and decreased his carbohydrate intake, he had about a three-week period in which he was kind of feeling shaky, not well recovered, not big work output. But then when he adapted to that, he had a superior work output, better recovery, was about 7 pounds heavier, and ended up increasing not only his metabolic output on CrossFit WODs, but also some pretty damn impressive strength numbers. Matt, at about 175 pounds, has over a 1,000-pound CrossFit total. So he's turning some pretty good numbers on all that. So these are just some things that folks need to keep in mind when they're thinking about either their own post-workout nutrition or a client's post-workout nutrition. To the degree, in my mind, that we can keep people insulin sensitive, and that generally means being moderate in our carbohydrate intake, I think that's a good thing. Andy, does that make sense, like from your perspective on all this post-workout nutrition, like on the performance side of stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I think that makes total sense. I think what the kind of Matt Lalonde experiment reminded me is that we've seen, I think, over the past 2 years, a handful of athletes that have done really well, kind of on a pretty low-carb diet, but still sort of spending a lot of time in that, like, glycolytic or CrossFit or, you know, whatever pathway, whatever we want to call that. And so, you know, what's your sense with folks as far as how folks could experiment that with that? What would be the best way? I know, you know, we've had great success, like with my wife, who does a fair amount of CrossFit training and eats a very, very low carb, you know, paleo-like diet, just based on some migraine issues we had and some body comp stuff. And it definitely took her a while to adapt. But once she adapted, we probably saw a performance increase similar to what we saw with Matt. So what's your kind of gut take on where you'd start to experiment with that, how you'd kind of maybe progress that over time, ramp up intensity? Because I think anytime we have a big shift, we're going to, you know, swap out a large bunch of our carbs and, you know, replace those with fats and protein. We definitely see a performance decrease, at least in the short term. And then I think folks kind of go on this downhill spiral. I'm seeing a performance decrease. This is not going to work for me. It's not worth kind of tinkering just to see where this would go.
Yeah, totally. And that's a great piece. If somebody wants to tinker with this stuff, they should pretty much sign up for the fact that they're going to have about a 3 to 4 week period in which they're going to be at sub-optimum metabolic conditioning. You know, CrossFit style WODs, boxing, wrestling, that sort of stuff is going to be tough. You know, they're not going to be at optimum work output. I did a blog post on, I think the title was The Zone and Athletic Performance. And it was originally slated to be kind of a CrossFit Journal piece, didn't really make the cut for that. So I just threw it up on my own blog. And what I was drawing on from that was some work from the Journal of Nutrition and Metabolism looking at ketogenic diets and work output. It's, you know, specifically kind of aerobic and anaerobic work output, and also experience from Joe Friel, who is a very well-known triathlon coach. Joe was a friend of Lauren Cordain's, and Lauren dared Joe to try a paleo diet, you know, told him that he would have fewer upper respiratory infections, would be able to train at a higher work output and whatnot, but warned Joe that he was going to have about a three-week period of down before he saw some up. And so this is just something that if folks are going to play with this, if they're going to, say, shift out, even if they were doing more yams and sweet potatoes, or if they were doing more of a bread, rice, pasta sort of approach, and then they shift into more just kind of veggies, you know, protein, fat, and veggies. Like a meal that I had earlier was about 8 ounces of ground beef, a can of coconut milk, and about a half a head of a red cabbage, all of that cooked down pretty good. And so ton of fat, very, very moderate in carbohydrate, you know, very antioxidant and vitamin dense, and then a pretty good hunk of protein. That would be a pretty typical meal. And now that I'm, you know, I've been eating this way for quite a while, so I'm pretty adapted to this. But folks are definitely going to experience about a three-week downtick while their metabolic engines start working better on fat, and then they'll see kind of an uptick out of that. And this moderate level of carbohydrate intake is going to be that's going to help replete a little bit of muscle glycogen. The high intake of protein, you get a little gluconeogenesis. You build some glucose out of protein. Dr. Mike Eads really, really likes this as a means of sneakily replenishing your muscle glycogen. And Scotty Hagness and I have talked about this a bunch. Scotty of CrossFit Portland, you know, is there a way to really fuel this kind of elite level work output with largely protein-derived glucose source? And if folks are familiar with Charles Poliquin, he recommends really high-dose glutamine post-workout, because the liver will convert the glutamine into glucose, and then that glucose can be shipped around to replete the muscle glycogen. And all of this is accomplished while still maintaining some very, very solid insulin sensitivity. And so you have some people out there who are just naturally very insulin sensitive, and this degree of tinkering with their food may not be necessary. They may, in fact, run better on a little bit more carbs. But what I've noticed is, to the degree that someone tends to be insulin resistant, they tend to do better and better and better on fewer and fewer carbs. And then I think that there's legitimately some people out there at the other end of the bell curve who just, you know, they could eat damn near anything and do comparatively well on it, at least for some period of time.
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting point there, kind of this bell curve and spectrum. I think we often all sort of fall into the trap of, you know, one size fits all. And I think you mentioned it in the beginning. I mean, really, there's sort of a right tool for the right place and the right time. And so, you know, we easily get caught up in, oh, you're this size athlete, you need this many blocks. But I think there's, you know, some principles to start with, and then a fair amount of tinkering, you know, once you kind of see that initial performance increase, to kind of figure out what fits best with you or what fits best with your client. You know, there's certainly body types that I think generally things will work better with than others. But I think folks really get wrapped around the axle and say, oh, I'm this size, I would eat this many blocks of protein, this many carbs, and everyone that size should be doing the same thing, regardless of what their goals are, you know, what their kind of output is they're putting in, and, you know, how insulin sensitive they are, et cetera.
Yeah, totally. And that's definitely something that I get consistently out of the CrossFit Nutrition Certs, is that folks are almost frustrated that there's not a one-size-fits-all recipe to this. And all I can tell folks is that you got to think. You know, if you're going to be a strength and conditioning coach, you're going to be a professional, you need to go out and look under every rock and then tinker and keep some notes and keep track of stuff and tinker and fiddle and ask questions. And that's all there is to it. You know, I feel like this kind of paleo approach as a baseline is really, really solid. And then from there, we've got just points of deviation. Some people are going to be at pretty high carbohydrate intake. Other people are going to be at pretty low carbohydrate intake. And there's some reasons why we're going to do all that stuff. Shifting gears out of the performance orientation and more towards like the aesthetics orientation, folks who are wanting to be lean or you know, like a gosh, probably 50 to 70% of our clients are body comp clients. You know, they're wanting to lean out and just essentially look good naked. And so for these people, I really hammer this low carb all the way around, you know, protein, fat, and veggies, supplementing with fish oil, usually to the tune of about a a half a gram per 10 pounds of body weight per day, and that's a half a gram of EPA and DHA. So it's a pretty good little slug of fish oil for these folks, and then we may titrate that down later as they get more and more leaned out. But an individual who is really trying to lean out, they are wholly inappropriate for some sort of a large carbohydrate meal post-workout. They're inappropriate for any type of liquid food. You know, like I did a blog post on post-workout nutrition and mentioned a couple of low-carb shakes, and people went wild on it. They're like, oh my God, this is great. And, you know, but if I want to lean out, should I do this? And it's like, no, you probably shouldn't, because liquid food is just inherently more insulin spiking than solid food. And then dairy is a very, very potent insulin spiker too. And I'm not frequently a huge fan of the zone, but it's one area in which it is very, very powerful is this thing that I did in a 42 Ways to Skin the Zone, the performance menu article. It's basically a half carbohydrate zone. So you find your zone prescription, cut the carbohydrates in half, and then for every block of carbs you delete, you add three extra fat blocks. And so what this diet ends up being, or what this, you know, prescription ends up being, is a adequate protein to probably not peel too much muscle mass off of an individual, caloric restricted, and then very, very low insulin load. And I honestly have seen nothing lean people out faster than that. That said, a basic unweighed, unmeasured paleo diet, just protein, fat, and veggies, works really, really well, but there's no doubt that some fairly severe caloric restriction is going to enhance that. So, you know, that's kind of a gradation. If you want somebody to have a relatively easy go at it, they could do an unweighed, unmeasured, low-carb paleo diet, low-carb being generally probably under 30 to 50 grams of carbs a day for females, probably under 50 to 70 grams of carbs a day for males, all of that stuff coming from low glycemic load veggies, essentially. So it's really, really hard to even reach that number. And then seat of the pants, just shooting for trying to get about a gram of protein per pound of body weight, and then just filling in a little bit of fat after that. That's very, very, very effective. This low carb, 50% carb zone approach is even more effective because you've got caloric restriction in there too. Here's a great question, though. Are people going to experience great performance on that 50% carb, calorie-restricted approach? And answer is no. You know, probably hell no. But this is something else. I used an analogy at the last CrossFit cert that we did in Bozeman, Montana. There's a technique for catching monkeys in, like, Southeast Asia where they will put a piece of fruit in a jar, tie the jar to a tree. The monkey walks up to the jar, reaches inside it, grabs the fruit. When the fist is made, then the monkey can't get its hand out of the jar. And so the people then walk up, crack the monkey over the head, and it's monkey soup that night. And I feel like a lot of our budding CrossFit trainers are the monkey with their hand in a jar, where they won't let go of anything to try to make any type of progress. And this is true whether we're talking training or whether we're talking nutrition or whatever. Everybody is horrified of losing their metabolic conditioning in deference of getting stronger. Everybody's horrified of seeing a performance dip in deference to being able to get leaner and getting more optimized body composition, so you have better strength to body weight ratio and whatnot. So you need to be really clear about what your goals or what the individual's goals are, and then tailor them appropriately. A number of people contact me, tend to be female, who are prospective CrossFit game, competitors, but they're still rolling somewhere around like 18 to 22% body fat. And these girls need to get leaned out more before they're going to have the, tons and tons of pull-ups, tons and tons of handstand push-ups. They need a better strength to body weight ratio to be able to pull that off. But frequently you're going to see some sort of a performance dip in the process of leaning out. And people need to be okay with that. They need to understand that they, this is where a little bit of block training and that evil word periodization comes in, where you actually think about your training and plan it and make some goals and extrapolate that over the year.
Yeah, and I think you know, for my money, what's interesting about the zone is I think it definitely, you know, obviously we get some more precision, we get some more accuracy. I think it appeals to a certain type of person. But I feel like for a lot of like our general body comp clients and just general folks we work with, sort of this unweighed, unmeasured paleo, low carb sort of dealio, you know, gives you 90-95% of the benefits for a lot of them. I think periodically you'll see, you know, outliers where, wow, they can somehow really, really overeat. But most of our folks, I almost feel like, do really well, unweighed, unmeasured. Some of the men tend to maybe undereat at times. So periodically we'll have to, you know, do a little food log and remind them, hey, we need a little bit more protein. We need some more fat, because sometimes, you know, we keep their insulin levels, you know, so stable that they don't get that hunger that they're accustomed to, sort of with the, you know, when they're consuming more high glycemic carbs.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Totally.
And I remember, you know, something that Ido Portal had said once, which to me made a lot of sense. You know, he was given a presentation about his approach to paleo nutrition, and he felt, you know, let's just start with the paleo nutrition, see where that takes us. Then we can start looking at, okay, are you one of those folks that maybe you know, eat entire jars of almond butter every day? Obviously, at some point, the advantages that we've gained by, you know, eating this low-carb paleo-like diet are going to be outweighed by the fact that you're consuming, you know, 2,000 calories of nuts a day.
Right.
For those folks, we may need to put some sort of stopgaps in, hey, continue what you're doing, but let's only eat 2 to 3, you know, servings of nuts a day or something.
Totally. Poliquin has a great line, which is people need to learn the difference between a mouth and a vacuum cleaner. And that's a perfect example there. So, yeah, yeah.
Do you maybe want to talk about some specific, a little bit in the beginning you discussed, you know, kind of your typical CrossFitter. You mentioned sort of this, you know, high school football athlete. Do we want to talk about maybe a couple of examples of folks a little bit more specifically, just so we can kind of address maybe some things from a little bit of a different angle, and then we can kind of spin off of those? What's your thoughts on that?
Totally, yeah, yeah. We use some hypothetical clients at the CrossFit Nutrition Cert, and we can kind of draw out of that. The first kid actually in the hypothetical clients, we call him Johnny Skinny Britches. And I've done this thing enough, I think I can kind of rattle it off from memory. Johnny's 6'3", 165 pounds, does Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu 5 days a week, CrossFit 3-on-1-off, and he's so lean you can see his heartbeat through his chest, you know. And then basic deal is like this kid comes to you for training, and what does he need? What does he need overall? And probably this kid, and let's take this thing, you know, jits is a very body weight dependent sport. Let's maybe change that and make it football, mm-hmm. you know, and where it's a kind of a maximum power output, you know, and maximum power in the sense of absolute power, not relative power, the way that we're usually kind of quantifying that in CrossFit land. So football athletes are very concerned with being big, strong, and powerful. Mm-hmm. And so this kid, let's say, is looking at playing football over, you know, you've got maybe 6 months, 9 months to do something with this kid. What are you going to do with him? How are you going to tweak his training and whatnot? And so I think some linear strength progression is obvious in this case. 3x5 back squat, 3x5 press, weighted pull-ups, weighted dips, you know, just trying to add a little more weight each session. And then the kid needs to eat until he's about ready to fall over. And this is a perfect, you know, anywhere from like 4 to 5 meals a day, maybe 6, but I think 4, a big breakfast, big lunch, big dinner, and then maybe a pretty good sized snack is reasonably about as much as you're going to get out of people. And then this is that perfect place for like some dairy, you know, the gallon of milk a day scenario is perfect for this. And if you were to tackle this kid in this way, really curtail the Metcon, especially if he's still doing some grappling in this case. You know, he's going to get plenty of Metcon from grappling, but really curtail his metabolic conditioning, get him in a smart linear progression strength routine, because this is probably his first time he's ever done any type of strength and conditioning. So, man, ride that first wave of adaptation, ride that pony till it falls over and dies, and feed him like crazy in that process. So you take this kid from 165 pounds, and in the course of 3 to 4 months, you could probably have him at or about 205, 210 pounds. Most of that change being muscular body weight, you've got a monster on your hands. Then if you need to start putting in some sport-specific Metcon or something like that, then you could think about redoing it. But whether this kid did jits, whether he wanted to play football, if you could stick 30 or 40 pounds of muscle on him over the course of a summer, which is completely doable with a eating and training regimen like this, one thing, you did good by your client, so he's going to be happy. He's going to be a walking billboard for your work. So if you actually want to be busy as a coach, it's kind of nice to actually get people the results that they desire and not just have them spin their wheels. And so this kid's going to be absolutely critical that you feed and water him properly and rein in his training so that he's not frittering away a bunch of calories doing metabolic conditioning that he simply doesn't need.
Yeah, and I think this is one of those cases where us as coaches, and sometimes even as athletes, we get really excited about some of that Metcon stuff. Some of those really hard chippers or couplets and triplets, and we like the feeling of seeing our clients, really exhausted after a workout, or they like the feeling of, really accomplishing something. But I think it always goes back to what are the goals and what are the results we're getting? Because at the end of 3, 4, 5, 6 months, if Johnny Skinny Britches or whatever we're calling him is not significantly stronger, we didn't do right by him. He's not going to be successful in his chosen goals. Yeah, he might turn, a little faster Fran time or whatever by doing a lot of conditioning. But, for my money, get him stronger, put the body weight on him, and then you can always layer in some of that Metcon later. That really seems to be dependent upon a good solid base of strength. It's pretty easy to lose some of that Metcon stuff, but it's also pretty easy to get it back.
Yeah. The Metcon, the conditioning is the most labile of any of those big characteristics, like strength, power, speed, all that sort of jive. Strength and power are the slowest to accrue, but also with a modicum of maintenance, you can also maintain those relatively easily. Once or twice a week, 3 sets of 1, 5 sets of 1 at 90% of your 1 rep max on back squat or deadlift, you will maintain 90-95% of your max strength. So a maintenance phase is very, very different than a strength acquisition phase. And we've used that very, very successfully with Glenn Cordoza, who's the IFC lightweight champion. It's not UFC caliber show yet, but Glenn's done amazingly well in this. And as a 170-pound fighter, Glenn has a 275-pound clean and jerk, a 225-pound snatch, a 480, I think, fight gone bad. And his training has basically focused around Olympic lifts and gymnastics in the gym. And then out of the gym, he grapples and boxes and does everything that an MMA fighter does. And in his off season, we will do more of a standard kind of CrossFit approach. But interestingly, Glenn's highest work outputs are when he's in fight camp. And that's when he's doing 6 hours a day of fight training. And then in those periods, he's in a strength maintenance phase. So we block his training to complement what his needs and goals are. And it's frankly terrifying to see what he does to these other 150, he fights at 155 pounds. So these dudes that he goes up against, it ends up looking like a man versus a boy in the fight. And the only other people that I see doing something on par with this is kind of like George St. Pierre. He has a very, very solid S&C coach, nutrition very solid, but it's rare that folks are handling that issue at that level and understanding the appropriate places to drop in metabolic conditioning and how to put that into a year-round training camp.
Sure.
So hey. Another real common person that we're going to deal with is a mother of two, maybe 25, 30 pounds overweight, something like that. Very, very busy, very hectic life. And this is one of those things for which the unweighed, unmeasured, kind of paleo approach to things is pretty easy, because when you have somebody who has a family and they work and they've got a relationship to maintain and all the rest of that stuff, and they want to come to your CrossFit facility or, whatever facility you're training at and get some training, the weighing and measuring of every one of their meals can be daunting at best. And, then it brings up the question of how do you feed mama bear and baby bear and papa bear and all that stuff. Whereas if you just generally cook and you have meat, veggies, fruit, nuts and seeds around, and folks eat to satiety on that, typically they do very, very well. And you mentioned, Andy, really the one thing that has hamstrung this very shooting from the hip approach, which is that sometimes people will overdo the nut consumption. So they're just taking in way too many calories for them to be able to lean out. At some point, even insulin control is going to lose out to just basic caloric intake. And the people, interestingly, can still be kind of overeating calorically, but not really gaining any weight because they're kind of modulating their insulin levels and upregulating their metabolic rate. But if we can then curtail their nut intake, then the people usually lean out quite quickly. And we've had examples, Katie Stuber and some of our other folks, size 14 down to a size 2 in 3 months, doing an unweighed, unmeasured paleo diet amidst owning a business, being married, having 2 or 3 kids. Sarah Fragoso is another great example of that. 3 kids, busy chiropractic practice. She's one of our busiest top producing trainers. And, you know, she a weighed measured approach was not going to work for her lifestyle. It wasn't going to work for her family. But the whole thing has been shifted over to basic paleo foods. And, you know, she went from a size 14 down to a size 2, is knocking on the door of a double bodyweight deadlift, has about 20, 22 pull-ups. She's a pretty solid little performer, and then, is a mom. So it's damn impressive stuff.
And I think what's also interesting about Sarah is, you know, we kind of get a lot of questions about, well, my family's not going to eat like this. My kids aren't going to eat like this. And I think, you know, Sarah's a good example where if the head of the household cooks this type of food, only shops for this type of food, you know, you may have a little, you know, uprising for a few days, but eventually kids are going to get hungry. They're going to eat. And as long as you're having good, healthy foods around the house, that's what they're going to eat. Sure, when they're at friends' houses or at school, they're probably going to consume, you know, some non-approved foods. But, you know, kids are kids, and you're only going to be able to control their behavior so much. But generally, we see them over time, you know, get excited, get accustomed to eating like this. And after a while, they don't think they're missing anything, frankly.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And that's the way Sarah's handled it. All of her kids are stoked on it. She did have the peasant uprising for a couple of days, but now the kids are all pretty fired up. And she actually is doing a blog, Everyday Paleo, which she's shifting that from a Tumblr account to a WordPress account. So we should have like a solid URL on that within a couple of days. But she's just kind of relating what they do every day, how they do breakfast, lunch, dinner, and the kids are all involved with it. And if she doesn't take a photo of one of the meals, then the kids are all over about it and usually take a photo. So she's made this whole transformation with the family, and it was some work up front, but it's way easier on the back end. And she's done it in a way where the kids aren't neurotic. You know, the kids enjoy what's going on. And when they go to friend's house, like you said, you know, they just eat what they eat. And so it's not so much that there's like good food or bad food. They just have what food is available at home, and that's what they roll with. So I think the last person that we'll kind of consider on this post-workout vein would be the underperformer. Usually when people start a CrossFit program, or some sort of solid strength and conditioning, but I think CrossFit, because it's so performance oriented, usually if people are fed and watered properly, and if they have some modicum of reasonable programming, they've got like a three and a half year of just personal record after personal record. Like every session in the gym seemingly should be an improvement on something. And it's maybe not everything, but, you know, just some element should be up. And when we see folks, and again, not to pick on the ladies, but it's usually female, they may have like one pull up, or they're right near one pull up, but they, you know, they'll have it and then they'll lose it. You know, the body composition isn't shifting as fast as it should. If we see somebody with kind of failure to thrive, or if we graph their progress like a, and it looks like a balloon bobbing along the roof of the ceiling of a room, then we know that the person is underfed, typically inadequate protein, inadequate fat, inadequate calories overall. And if we can get this person to just up their food intake overall, and this would probably be a person that I wouldn't, you know, depending on where the body composition was at, if they're already lean, I might drop in a few more carbs in that post-workout meal just to try to stimulate the appetite a little bit. A lot of these folks are kind of meal skippers, and so we may even give them a little more yam, a little more sweet potato or fruit or something to try and get them hungry later so that they eat more. If the body composition is an issue, then I'll keep them lower carb and try to lean them out while we're doing this. But generally, if people are fed and watered properly, they should see some really good improvement in their body composition. And the again, the choice of what route one does with the post-workout meal is going to be dependent on where the person is at and what their goals are.
Sure. And I think, you know, the other point to make on that is there's always some room for tinkering on all this. So, you know, some of the things that we commonly see as being successful, sometimes we obviously find folks that are on totally the other side of the spectrum. And so that's why I know you're always encouraging everyone, you know, tinker a little bit. And I think, you know, as coaches and trainers, as even as fitness enthusiasts, there's got to be some room for that in your training. Obviously, you can't tinker forever. But, you know, blocks of sort of trying different approaches, kind of minor tweaks to see how it impacts your training, you know, your general well-being, your level of leanness, you know, whatever your goals are certainly things that I think in the long run are worthwhile to do. Otherwise, you kind of get caught up in, this is the only approach that works, this is the only approach that works for me, and it may work really well, but sometimes, you know, taking breaks to try other things I think is very beneficial long-term.
Yeah, absolutely. And as soon as you think you've got it all figured out, then you've ceased your evolution. And if you're a coach and you think you've got it all figured out, you're going to get passed up in the mix because other folks are going to be tinkering and evolving their programming, whether it's food related or training related or, you know, any other type of advancement with this. It comes down to some real basic stuff at the end of the day. You know, it's typically like, you know, lift heavy, work hard, all that sort of jive. But there's always new ways to skin the cat. And there's just every time I get to hang out with someone like Mike Bergner or Rip or Ruttman or someone like that, these folks that have been doing this stuff for like 30 years and how they've paid their bills doing this stuff for 30 years, it's stunning how many different ways they've tried. And they've always got their 90% rules, like 90% of my folks fall within this kind of approach, but then they've got that, you know, 10% wiggle room for everybody that their standard approaches aren't working. And so definitely encourage folks to keep open-minded, keep learning, keep educating yourself, take some basic science classes for crying out loud, take some anatomy, physiology. You should understand how all that shit wires together. It's a critical if you're going to take yourself seriously as a strength and conditioning professional that you get continuing ed in all of these areas.
Absolutely. Hey, Rob, we're coming up on about 40 minutes, so I think, you know, for our first podcast, it's probably, you know, a solid time to kind of wrap things up.
Cool.
You know, one of the things I think for the listeners, if anyone is actually going to listen to this and listen to me interject and you ramble a bit, you know, I think topic suggestions would be something that would be helpful for us long term. I think a lot of our ideas for the podcast come on random questions and things we talk about at the gym, you know, and based on your nutritional seminar speaking and just different conversations. But I think, you know, some of these we're going to be able to glean from your blog. Obviously, post-workout nutrition gets a lot of hits. But I think we're certainly open to suggestions and ideas that for folks, things that folks want to talk about.
Yeah, totally. And in the future, like you said, we'll actually probably have a little more focus because we'll be answering specific questions and whatnot. Just this post-workout question has been pretty nebulous for folks. And we, you know, obviously stepped all around that and looked at some stuff besides just post-workout nutrition. But it shows a little bit of the complexity of how folks need to have a pretty broad view of it. But yeah, if folks have ideas for what they want to hear, ship it into robwolf.com, just the contact page there. And if it's good and smart, then we'll probably answer it. You know, this is how we want to get as much information out to folks as we can.
Cool. All right, Rob. Well, with that, we're going to shut down our first podcast, and we'll see upon re-listening how bad we suck.
I'm sure it's horrible, but we'll keep giving it a shot if folks are interested in hearing it. Thanks, Andy.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay.
Bye.